on FUBAR Radio.
That's right, it's spoiler alert time. It's August. It's summertime. I guess. It's technically. I'm Adam Antium.
I'm Claire Lim.
And I'm Richard Edwards.
Hello, guys. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. How about you, Richard?
Yeah, pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. We're all good. Okay, we're all good.
Yeah,
it's summertime.
To be fair, it's been pretty good this week.
It's been okay.
Yeah, this week's been fine. And then it's just today, the day we're recording, it's just become like overcast and murky and sort of drizzly.
It's proper August.
Yeah. And there's your weather report.
Yeah.
How is everyone? So everyone's okay. What's coming up on the show this week, Claire?
Right, well, we've got the creator of No Man's Sky, which is very exciting, Sean Murray.
Yes, I spoke to him earlier on this week to talk about the new video game.
And
I have played a bit of it now.
Yeah, is it good?
It's really, really good. Okay. I really enjoy it.
The reviews weren't that good.
They're a bit hit and miss, and I can understand where they're coming from, because if you're not into one of those big... Well, we'll talk about it later, but if you're not into like these big sandbox games, then it's sort of really not for you.
Okay, fair enough. And then we've got Iron Fish & Co. developer and CEO, of Beef Jack, Sean Leach. He's coming to speak about Iron Fish, which is a PC game.
They are. And they're also neighbours of ours.
Oh.
So they're just
And that's
there.
Who you bumped into?
Yeah, so we bumped into them in the pub next door. And we got chatting to them, and they was like, oh, yeah, we've got a game. Oh, yeah, no, I'd love...
And that was it.
And an interview was born.
We're also going to talk about Star Trek Beyond, Suicide Squad, Ghostbusters and Stranger Things. So all of the sort of biggest things that have been happening in the last month.
Yeah, it's been quite big, hasn't it?
Yeah, so we've all had quite a big geeky month, especially you, Richard.
Yes.
Yeah, films, TV, San Diego Comic-Con, Star Wars Celebration in London. It's been packed.
Yeah.
And they've got geek news, as usual.
Yeah.
The good, the bad and the ugly at the very end of the show.
And trailer trash.
Yes, trailer trash as well, with some of the biggest trailers.
And we've got some good trailers that come out of Comic-Con, haven't we?
Yes,
right.
Yes we do.
So we're going to kickstart the show with a song from Stranger Things. Now, I love Stranger Things, and we'll be talking about it off the back of this.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? Decisions bugging me.
Decision, they molest us.
If you don't want me, set me free.
Say no more, careless, leave your
men. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Or should I blow? Split. Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?
Yeah. That is a key plot point song.
Won't say anything. Oh, well, we can say stuff now because yeah,
that's
the whole
don't
world.
That's a massive spoiler, though.
Yeah.
No, it's not really.
I mean, it's not like there's any lines in you know, the Clash that kind of feed into Stranger Things. It's just.
But we've all seen Stranger Things.
Hasn't everybody?
I think the whole world has seen Stranger
it's
Things.
It's so good.
I haven't met anyone that doesn't like Stranger Things. I was just saying off air there. I was unsure of the first two episodes. I thought were great, and I love the John Carpenter-esque theme tune in the beginning, and clearly hit on all the points of my childhood. But then I stopped after a few days. I watched a couple of episodes and was like, okay, no. Thought about it, and then went back into it and just absolutely binge watched it. And it was really, really good. Like, it just hit all those key notes, as you were saying earlier, of our childhood kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, it's just I think. Nothing about it is original because everything is kind of pinched off something else. You know, there's bits of Stephen
King. Oh yeah, you can see all the nuances and all the like sort of homages to every 80s film, pretty much ever.
Yeah, but because it takes from so many sources, it kind of feels original. You know, it was shot in a very sort of faithful to the 80s kind of way. The soundtrack's great. I mean, so John Carpenter-y. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just got that right. It's kind of like the way Tarantino just pinches off everybody and makes something that feels original. This did the same thing, but with 80s TV.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Super 8, but probably done better.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I thought Super 8 was okay, but, definitely there's parallels there, you know, with like the kids being the sort of main protagonists and things like that. But I thought it was great. I think there's nothing wrong with taking from, you know, sort of like old school movies and things from the 80s. Yeah, but as long as you kind of like put it together in a nice little package and it's not, you know, I didn't feel at any point. There was a particular scene where the kids are on bikes being chased and I was like, E.T.
So why don't you just take off, guys? It would make it so much easier.
I was like, come on, 11. I thought 11 was going to like elevate them into the sky or something. I really did. I was like, this is so easy. But it made me smile. Everything made me smile. I thought it was really, really well written. And I love the world that they created as well, like the upside down.
That was brilliant.
I love it. And they've left it very open for a possible second season, which hasn't been confirmed yet.
No, nothing's been confirmed, but nothing's been denied, has it either?
I kind of hope they don't.
You just want that?
Well, I think it was a really perfect length. It was 8 episodes. It's kind of like, you know, Fargo, the way Fargo does one story across.
Yeah.
You know, okay, Fargo has done a second season that was a completely different time and everything, but I just thought it wrapped itself up really nicely. It told its story, you know. Okay. Things are left ambiguous at the end. Is that better? Things are left ambiguous at the end, but that's fine. You know, a lot of the best movies are left ambiguous at the end. And, you know, just leave it. It's great.
Well, what do you think if they did, like, a second season, like Fargo, but changed, maybe went into a different zone, a different place, different characters?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, but you could make it into an anthology show. That would be good. I mean, you would lose something, obviously, because the kids were so good. I mean, for a cast of unknowns, they were just so well found, and
they weren't
easy roles as well. But you know, they managed to get the main girl, Elle, who's obviously, you know, been in this sort of science lab. What a brilliant performance! And then, you know, just the boys, you know, this enthusiasm and this sort of we're on an adventure thing, and just getting the relationships between kids and you know, this sort of thing going from you're my best friend ever to I hate you, and
very Stand By Me esque.
It was, yeah,
kind of thing. And it's very, I think it's hard to get a cast of kids that are so good together, very well written, a cast of kids that, you know, you can see the nuances, because it is hard, like, you know, being a kid
and they've probably never seen half of the films that they're reenacting
the
scenes.
Oh, I don't know, if I was a director I would have made them watch all of them.
I think probably quite a few of them might have gone away and watched if they're, you know, but they wouldn't have grown up in that time at all.
No.
But I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I just loved the feel of it. It just made me smile. Like, it just made me really happy. Again, I love that world they created. I think the best sort of TV series are when, and there's so many, like Outcast and Preacher and Wayward Pines and all these things that are popping up, and The Walking Dead, they've created worlds, you know, and some of them are hit or miss, but this one felt fantastical and warm and horror and believable as well. You're like, oh, the Upside Down, and there's some, you know, there's science to that fiction for sure, whereas sometimes it just seems ridiculous. So I loved it. I thought it was great.
I think it was perfect length as well, 8 episodes. It's not daunting to start.
You
can actually plough through it in a not unreasonable binge. You know, it's not like you're having to sort of take a week off to do it. You know, you can just watch it and you're done. It's not the point where you ever feel like there's a filler episode. It was just a really good length. It was paced well. It just did everything right, I thought. I mean, and it just made me feel, you know, happy.
I think Stranger Things, tick, absolutely loved it. A+. Really enjoyed it, and I think I'm in agreement with Rich. I think maybe if they just left it like this, I'd be quite happy. I'm not actually yearning for a second season, I must say. There are some things where you're going, oh yeah, come on, like, you can't wait. Vikings for me is one. I really just want to keep it going. But yeah, with this, if they were just like, nah, that's it, we're going to do something else, I'd be quite happy with that. I think it would be okay. But, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see.
What else have we seen this month? I have gone to see Star Trek Beyond.
I've not seen it, but I've read a lot of kind of mixed things about it. So what did you guys think?
I thought it was fairly good. I mean, obviously, this film, I didn't feel like got enough press because of Suicide Squad and Ghostbusters coming out around the same time. It sort of just fell behind.
I think the marketing was slightly...
That's what I mean.
I think there was a lot of press, but I think the marketing wasn't strong enough. There wasn't... Like, Idris Elba wasn't in a lot of the things that I saw, and there didn't seem to be a main villain that was coming through, and it doesn't seem, considering it's the 50th anniversary, there didn't seem to be a main focus on the story.
There wasn't a huge push on. Yeah, you're right, because it's the 50th anniversary this year.
Well, September will be the 50th.
But there was no real sort of.
There was no
because
yeah.
to make a big deal about this is this we're celebrating 50 years. Let's make this film huge.
Because you get the first film Star Trek back in 2009, I think it was. So that was reboot. You know, harking back a little bit to the classic, but it's an alternate. So you had a definite vibe. Then you got the second one, Into Darkness it was, and that was Cumberbatch, and so it was all about Cumberbatch and who is Cumberbatch, you know, what's he, and so it kind of just felt a bit like, especially when you kind of compare it, not compare it, but look at the marketing behind Star Wars and Rogue One, and there feels like you're going in a definite forward motion with those ones, there's a definite story, you kind of know what's happening. Yeah, this one was a bit, I still want to see it, I really want to see it.
I enjoyed watching it. It got a bit slow to start with. Okay. I was a bit like, and then obviously after the Enterprise gets blown up, spoiler alert, it gets blown up for like the
you kind of see that in
time.
The trailer.
It's such a cliche now. I think it must be like a third of the Star Trek movies the Enterprise gets destroyed in.
I did see something the other week about how many Star Trek and how many Enterprises have actually been blown up. And the number is quite high. It's like, I think... From the original series and Next Generation, plus all the films, I think 12 Enterprises have been blown up. I mean, that must be costing the taxpayer a fortune.
but they've evolved beyond money.
Exactly.
A post-cash society.
Yeah, credrons or something. I don't know, I want to see it. I wasn't choking to see it in the cinema or anything. I wasn't like, absolutely gasping for Star Trek Beyond. And you know, Justin Lin, I know he did the Fast and Furious stuff, but I've actually never watched a Fast and Furious film, kind of a bit skeptical about all that. But I think when it's available to watch on TV and stuff, I'll buy it, I'll download it, you know. But yeah, it looks okay.
I mean, I thought it was a good side of okay. I mean, it didn't blow me away. I thought there were really nice bits to it. I thought there were some really nicely shot scenes. I mean, visually they were great. I mean, the swarm of craft sort of. Tearing the Enterprise apart was great. There was a really nice shot of the Enterprise in a kind of warp bubble, which looked fantastic, and some really nice shots of it launching out of a star base, which, you know, just really interesting ways of shooting it. But the story, I mean, they said it's trying to get back to sort of traditional Star Trek, and there is an element to that, but there's a lot of...
Yeah, I did feel like there was sort of like a classic episode vibe to it, because I've been rewatching the original series on Netflix now. And it does have that. I kind of was trying to see that trying to come through, but didn't get the whole way there.
And it kind of does succumb a little bit to let's have a big fight in space.
I feel like most films are like that.
But it is. That's what they did. It's kind of like you can get to your third act, and if you haven't got enough set pieces, you're doing something wrong, which is a real shame. And I kind of walked out of it just like, okay, I just don't remember much of that movie. You know, it just kind of washed over me, and it was okay, and I was never bored, but it wasn't something where I walked out. I was like, God, I want to see that bit again.
But I kind of feel like a lot of these blockbuster films now, we're going to talk about Ghostbusters and the Suicide Squad after this, they're like a piece of music, you know, and you're building towards the climax, and everybody knows that. So you're going into the cinema going, there'll be, you know, intro, bit of story, you know, then it'll build up to something. And it just feels like a tried and tested formula. And I think that's why everything is kind of okay now. And when you say this is the good side of okay, that's the thing. You've got the blob that's okay, and it's either a good side or bad side of okay, or it's terrible.
Mm.
But, you know.
This thing, though, with the big action sequence at the end, I mean, every blockbuster has one, but I think they kind of confuse the idea that it's not about the scale of it, it's about what the action sequence does. I mean, look at the end of Star Wars, A New Hope. Okay, it's not that big, really. No. It's really just a guy sort of going in a trench.
Exactly.
But it's dramatically interesting, you know, and you can get your head around it, you know what the stakes are. Mm-hmm. That's why that works. It's not because it's big or anything. And sometimes I think it's just like, let's show how much money we can put on the screen. And, you know, I'd much rather have a quieter end. And, you know, like you say, Civil War, it got its big set piece out of the way quite a bit before the end and had a slightly smaller one at the end.
But again, the stakes were higher because these are two brilliant characters going at it. Like, you know, I completely agree. I think when things like that, when you're in the cinema and you're seeing those big set pieces, you start to just go, I'm kind of clock watching a little bit. And I felt like that with Batman v Superman and stuff. And we'll talk about Suicide Squad and stuff later. I just kind of was like, but yeah, I agree. I think just keeping it tight and more in line with the story, just thinking about it a little bit more. But I was just going to say
with Star Trek, there were some really nice nods to the history of Star Trek. I mean, just little lines here and there. A surprising amount that were nodding back to Enterprise, which is, you know, and that part of the chronology. But also, there was a really nice bit, I thought, at the opening where it was Kirk's captain's log, like 2.5-3 years into this 5-year mission. And basically, a really good thing about the boredom of it, you know, just the monotony of every day. And there's a wonderful shot of him where he sort of opens his wardrobe and it's just a line of the same jumper, you know. it kind of nailed it. And I don't really think that Shatner Kirk would ever have got bored of being in space, because, you know, there's always an alien woman to find or a new civilization to blow up. But it was quite a nice little handle on it, I thought.
Oh, I definitely want to see it. I think that little explanation you just did there is making me want to see it even more. Ghostbusters, still not seen it.
Still not seen it, Claire?
No. And I'm kind of, you know, I don't care about the marketing for it, like, you know, and all the reviews. I will watch it, but I know I'm going to come out of it. I know already I'll be like, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. I think it's just going to be okay. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. I think it's been deemed a flop.
Undeservedly so.
I think that's just because it had so much bad press around it. But I went to go see it the weekend it came out.
Enjoy it?
And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cool.
I thought the cast were absolutely brilliant. I thought the effects were a bit OTT in some points. But I really enjoyed it. What about you, Richard?
I enjoyed it. And, you know, I thought it was really good fun. I thought going out for a remake, which, you know, of a really loved film, I think they did it right, because there were quite a lot of nods to the original, and you know, the tech's all the same and stuff, but the origins are quite different and the tone of it is quite different as well. Okay. The humour is different. And I laughed a lot.
Oh,
yeah. I thought the cast were pretty, you know, they were all good. I thought that Kate McKinnon as Holtzman was just amazing.
Oh.
You know, every time she's on camera, you know, it's just the way she looks at people, the way, you know, she's just interesting to watch. She's always doing something. And Chris Hemsworth as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as the stupidest man on earth. But he really does it well.
Oh, okay.
I came out happy, which is something like that film should do. And I don't know if it was because I saw it within 12 hours of seeing Suicide Squad. that sort of made everything seem better. But no, I really enjoyed it.
I think we should go on to Suicide Squad,
because
that's the freshest of the bunch here.
In many ways.
I have not seen.
Okay, can we speak about it?
Right,
are
do you know
okay?
what? I am not going to go. I'm going to put my hands up. I'm probably not going to go to the cinema to see this film now.
Okay.
So I'm going to wait for the DVD. I might not even wait for the DVD. I may even wait for it to be on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
I may not even wait for it to be on Netflix. It's probably going to be on ITV.
Okay, so...
Spoil away.
Right, okay.
Spoil away.
That might be too soon.
I was really excited about this one because I think the fact that we were seeing characters that weren't just the usual DC stable of heroes.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Batman, Superman stuff. But so I thought that the start of the film, it felt like a very weird, a confused sort of film. Like, and I heard that they had made last minute script changes and editing choices.
Was there a script?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm trying to. No, I'm a diplomatic one. But yeah, I just kind of felt like the first part of the film was like, oh, okay, cool. And then they concentrated on a few characters, Deadshot, Harlequin, obviously.
Yeah.
And then kind of the rest were like, whatever. I thought El Diablo, I didn't mind him as a character. If I'm going to say something good, I thought his story seemed a bit more whatever. I'd like to see more of him. But I just thought that the script, the jokes, and I'm saying jokes, quips or whatever, were terrible.
They're just groaning. Oh.
They're very obvious, and all the things you see in the trailer worked in the trailer, but it just felt really flat within the scenes.
I think it was really damaged by the trailer because the funny lines were all in a trailer.
Yeah,
yeah, and then that was it. And I thought it was very. I thought it was a really kind of like.
I think that what you just did there, Claire, just probably sums up the film. You just went.
I know. Like, I'm trying to. Thing is, because I really wanted to like it. Even like, I really wanted to like Harlequin. I thought out of everything, she was probably one of the best things, but also not the best thing ever. Mm. I think Margot Robbie's great, and I really wanted to see a little bit more of the other characters develop. Because Killer Croc and stuff. I mean, some of them didn't even need to be there. But and the Joker, I just thought Jared Leto's Joker was. I know that he said that a lot of scenes got taken out of the film, but I think even with those scenes, I didn't think he was a very good Joker. He came across very cartoony, and it didn't work for me at all. But I mean, at one point, my husband walked out of the film to just do a bit of work on his phone.
Oh, you're kidding.
He was like, I've got to set up an interview with someone, so I'm just going to go out. And he was out for like 20 minutes, came back, and I was like, sorry, nothing interesting's happened. They're walking around. It's like, and that's it. I thought the villain... who is the Enchantress? It wasn't a strong enough villain, and she didn't have a really great motivation. Hi, I've woken up. Gonna take over the world a little bit. And that was it. It's just like, ugh. So, Rich, I've been kind of somewhat diplomatic, but what about you? Oof. Let rip.
Yeah, well, I'm actually still debating which I disliked more, this or Batman v Superman. I mean, which I think... kind of sums it up a little bit, and I really wanted to like this film. I really wanted it to be good because I thought, you know, the idea of Suicide Squad as a movie, that this is the next movie what DC and Warner do, that was really exciting. You know, this was really sort of flipping the superhero thing on its side. But I don't know, it's such a mess. I mean, just you said there about the way the story's told. I mean, it has no structure. It kind of opens with the montage of introducing the characters, and it comes from nowhere. So it's like, okay, why are they here? And then suddenly they're dealing with this problem that's a really nondescript problem, and they're just sort of walking around, sort of gradually, you know, having a little bit of a battle with some weird men covered in bubble wrap.
Yeah, they look like giant, like, blackberries or something.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, that's production design or whatever. But it's one of these films where character motivations just flip in an instant, and people walk around going, I hate you, you're my best friend, I hate anything's happened to you. And you know, it's, as you say, most of the characters are nondescript. I thought Will Smith was fine as Deadshot. Mm-hmm. I thought Margot Robbie was good, and El Diablo I thought was good. But you know, most of the characters are just like, well, you know, why are you here? I thought the Joker, I didn't like Jared Leto's performance.
No.
I could see what he was trying to do, and I know they were saying we wanted to make him more of a crime boss and stuff, but I really didn't. I don't know, maybe I'm too in love with the Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger Jokers, but it really was.
But when you compare, let's leave the Jack Nicholson joke, which is just the most recent, so Heath Ledger and Jared Leto, you start to see there's just something really beautifully subtle about the way Heath Ledger played the Joker. Like, the you know, the scene, for example, in the Nolan film where he slams the guy's head against a pencil. And it's so out of the blue. Whereas Jared Leto's was squirmy and, I don't know, predictably crazy. It's like, oh, he's mental, you know, yeah. Whatever. It just didn't seem that great.
And I mean, they tried to show a little bit about how he kind of, I guess, corrupted Harley Quinn. And again, that was just so much snapshots. You never really got a sense of what was going on. And it's a weird bit where they just jump into some chemicals. You know, like, why has this happened?
Yeah.
I mean, he's persuaded her, but why? I mean, I know it's part of the character's origin, but, you know.
Because they're obviously trying to kind of, like, hark back to that New 52 Harlequin origin story. And I don't think people will get that, like, because what you're saying, you know, all of a sudden they're jumping to vat chemicals, you know, there's no explanation.
But it's fine to do that and allude to stories, but that's obviously quite an important plot point, and it's not explained in the movie. And, you know, I just thought it was a real mess of storytelling, and it wasn't funny enough. You know, it didn't have much charm. I was sitting there thinking, I want this film to end. And that's not good.
No, that's never good. And you know, but it's.
I might not even watch this film when it comes onto ITV.
You might be okay because I've got friends who've seen it, you know, and they were expecting it to be terrible. And actually, they've come out going, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. And I mean, that's a positive.
It's a bit of a. There you go. We're ending a good note. But it's a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, it has made a lot of money, like 500 million or something.
It's done really well. I mean,
in comparison to Civil War, which is 1.1 billion, I think it's at.
I'm not sure what. I mean, the interesting thing with this is Batman v Superman had a spectacular opening weekend, but then it dropped off quite a lot because it wasn't getting good word of mouth and people weren't going for the repeat viewings.
No.
So, which is what really propels things to the massive audiences. But I think. This, I don't think it's dropped off. I can't remember exactly, but I don't think it's dropped off quite as quickly as Batman v Superman.
No,
and
not.
It has got a very good fan buzz.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I think they, like, because I work on Dan Clark's show, and we was talking about this, and he said that I think for it to be a success, or to be classed as a successful film, it has to reach about $800 million. And most of that was pre-sale tickets, because the whole hype around it, everyone was going, yeah, I want to book tickets. So if it's starting to drop off now, that's probably like the sign that it's not.
Yeah.
Everyone's going, go see it. It's not really.
I mean, it's true because we're in this sort of now in that territory of critics versus fans, and I think a few of the cast were saying, "Well, critics just don't, you know, maybe they just don't like superhero movies," and I really don't think that's an accurate thing to say, seeing as, you know, Civil War got really good reviews and a lot of Marvel
Deadpool.
Films do, and they're all very highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes.
Exactly.
And you know, and I think a lot of critics are fans. You know, I don't think there's a separation. So. I don't think anyone was out to get Suicide Squad.
No.
I just think it's quite a disappointing film.
Yeah, it's not very good.
We'll talk about the DCU later, whether it's like, because this is now the second film in its new expanded universe. Third film. Whether it's going to fall on its arse and die.
I think all hope should be pinned on Lego Batman.
Yeah, I'm going to put all my money behind Lego Batman as well, because that genuinely looks like a good film. But yeah, I'm not too sure. We're obviously going to talk about Wonder Woman trailer later.
Yeah, we'll talk about Wonder Woman Justice
League. Let's just say that is one movie that's got a lot riding on it now.
Yeah, yes.
Right, so we're going to play a track, and then we're going to get the co-developer and CEO of Beef Jack in the studio, Sean Leach. We'll be back after this.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Spoiler Alert on Fubar Radio. I am Adam Johnson, Adamantium.
I am Claire Lim.
And I'm Richard Edwards.
And now we're joined in the studio by CEO of Beefjack and co-developer of a really good new game called Iron Fish, Sean Leach. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Now, Friday morning.
Yeah,
it's a little bit grey, but good.
So we are neighbours.
We are neighbours.
You live in the offices just below us. So first of all, I apologise for all the noise.
I'm glad you got in there first. And we didn't even bring in a bag of sugar or anything like that.
That's it. We could have exchanged sugar. Yeah. we're technically like that. We're not the noisy neighbours. This show's not the noisy neighbour show because it's like the most noisy thing is like whenever I say that Transformers is a good film and Michael Bay is a good director.
Oh,
Claire,
God.
Claire will lamp me with a stool.
I think you need to leave the room.
I'm joking. He's a terrible, terrible director.
Yeah, Adam. You love him. You've got your Michael Bay pants on right now.
And he did make The Rock.
Yeah.
So The Rock kind of wins.
Well, that, yeah, it, that's fine.
That means it can be forgiven. Yeah. The Rock's amazing. Yeah.
It's a great movie. So, Sean, can you tell us about Beefjack? What is Beefjack? We've been neighbours now for about 2 years, but we don't really know much about what you guys do downstairs.
Yeah, well, I guess that's Beefjack all over, isn't it? Still a little bit underground. We are, I would sort of say, champions of the indie kind of gaming kind of culture scene.
Okay.
It's been bubbling around for many, many years. Beefjack started off having a magazine. We used to sort of talk about alternative games, I guess indie, what we kind of call today. We used to make web games as well. We used to have a little community. But today, yeah, it's evolved in a really different way as the indie scene is kind of evolved as well. So we've got Beefjack Promote, which focuses on indie game marketing.
Mm.
We've got a few exciting projects at the moment. Projects like Unbox, Planet Explorers, Adventure Dogs, all kind of coming out pretty soon. And you know, the great thing is that we kind of really work with these sort of indie studios. You know, we show them a bit about game dev if that's what's needed. We show them how to sort of market unusual products as well, because a lot of these games are unusual. You know, like no one's really sort of seen these types of games before, so it's not the traditional AAA stuff. So,
do you find that the indie games are now sort of becoming, I don't know, like in the forefront of what people are actually expecting from video games now? Because like you've got, people get sick and tired of your Call of Duties and you know, that sort of genre of games. Where now indie games are coming along, and I've played a couple. I've played Iron Fish one, and also
Limbo's another good one.
Limbo, yes,
that's Super Meat Boy.
Yeah.
Firewatch.
Yeah.
All indie games that are like absolutely phenomenal, and I put them ahead of some of the bigger AAA games that I've played.
Well, I think that's a really interesting thing. So, you know, the value of a good idea right now is pretty huge. As the tools and technology of games dev is starting to decrease, you know, we've got great tools like Unity now, even Unreal 4 is more affordable. We're starting to see the birth of really good ideas, you know, and actually the power of a good idea, you know, executed right with the right partners around you, can be absolutely massive. This is really what we're kind of here to do, really help indies make sure that, you know, especially if it's your first game, that you learn all the things that you need to learn. You know, you learn about art, you learn about good gameplay mechanics, you know, you learn about all these sort of different areas. Beefjack Create even is the arm of the business that's really designed to sort of maybe reach out to, I wouldn't say Super Meat Boy because those guys are pretty, they know their stuff, but if there was a new studio that was looking to sort of make their first big idea, Beefjack Create would be a good arm to sort of reach out to them, show them how to design a game, show them how to build a team, you know, show them the business of the games industry. Beefjack Create, I think, kind of accommodates a lot of new indies. Yeah.
So your game that you co-developed, Iron Fish.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Because I've played a little bit of the game, the demo, and also seen the trailer and stuff. But
trailer's amazing.
Cool. Thank you very much.
I was saying to Adam earlier, it reminded me a lot of, like, you remember games like Riven and Mist and stuff?
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that,
but underwater.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It looked really interesting. Tell us more about the game, though.
Love to. So the creator of the game is Dean Edwards. It's his idea, his baby. And Dean kind of approached us, similar to sort of Beefjack Create, as we spoke about. He wants to build this game. He wants to build this world. We thought it was a fantastic project. Dean's got a lot of love for marine biology, you know, how the depths of the ocean work.
Yeah, because you've been working with the Whales and Dolphins Conservation.
We have been working with Whales and Dolphins Conservation. Chris Butler-Stroud, CEO there, great guy. We've met up with him many times, had a few drinks. Absolutely loves Iron Fish. It's a game about... you're sort of investigating a disturbance underwater with some of these marine life, some of these creatures. So it starts off really calm, and actually Keris as a lead, she's really delicate, she's really caring, you know, for the marine life down there as well. So she's not sort of going in there all guns blazing. This is not a Rambo movie or anything like that. So the Whales and Dolphins guys really loved the theme, loved the fact that we were being so protective and nurturing over the marine life, and yet we still managed to shoehorn a horror game in there as well. So it's a really interesting game, lots of twists and turns. The story, I think, is the really kind of the main sort of piece of the raison d'etre, if you like, of the game. But yeah, there's a few good horror moments in there. There's a few good puzzles in there as well. Yeah, we try to take you on adventure.
Oh, interesting. I mean, can you tell us, explain it? Because when I was watching the trailer, and as you said, it starts off very calm. Puzzles and things that all appeal to me, kind of thing. But yeah, then there's like a few things in the trailer that just drop in for a second. And you're like, oh. Can you explain any more of the horror element to it, or would that be giving it away?
Well, I tried to not spoil it for anybody on day one, but you know, the main themes that we've kind of got going on are elements of kind of science meets nature. So there is, quote unquote, an evil, and we kind of explore, you know, how this unfolds with looking at science, looking at the fact that only 4% of the ocean's been uncovered. So actually there's a lot of kind of material and a lot of ways that we can kind of pull together a nice, convincing horror experience.
Yeah, and I think it's I guess delving into the ocean, because we've got No Man's Sky out at the moment.
Great game.
Which is another sandbox game, but we're looking to the skies kind of thing, but this one's going, it's on planet Earth.
Yes.
Kind of thing, and that's, again, I think it's something that we've not really explored too much of in games and stuff like that. But yeah, like what kind of influenced the sort of making of the game when you guys were creating this game and coming up with the story and the world? What games and films and TV can influence this?
That's a really good question. So I think at the heart of the game there is a there's almost a documentary, like hidden away in there somewhere. I think there's a couple of Attenborough pieces that Dean loved, I loved as well. I think it was Into the Depths. So it was a big series, BBC kind of documentary. But there's been other things as well, sharks and lots of documentaries actually about underwater life. So I think that was the first kind of core thing that we wanted to put across. You know, we wanted to make sure that it was realistic. We wanted to make sure that we did credit to the ocean. So it almost started off as a big research project. And then we need to add on entertainment, you know. So this is where we started to layer on the elements of horror and puzzle and things like that. And because it's, you know, there's a handful of games that work underwater, we kind of had quite good carte blanche to invent a lot of new systems, invent a lot of new mechanics. So Iron Fish is definitely quite a unique game. We can certainly say that much. But yeah, it hangs together pretty well.
Yeah, so like films like The Abyss and stuff like that, they were sort of...
Yeah, I mean, with horror movies as well and horror games, we spent a lot of time sort of researching lots of different things. Obviously, there's right now for gaming, there's kind of loads and horror kind of bits out as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we want to do something to sort of stand out as
it's
well.
It's sort of like, I'm feeling a reboot of sort of horror games. There's been a lack of horror games, like proper good, like, you know, you don't want to go into that room. I never have to go into that room.
Like that Silent Hill demo that was released like about a year and a half or something.
Yeah,
I couldn't even play it. I watched my husband play it and I was like, oh, no, don't do that.
Well, actually, I've just played the Resident Evil 0 Hour sort of for
good.
Number 7. Really,
I can't play horror games.
So scary,
I tried to play that Alien one. I can't remember what it's called.
Isolation.
And I got through half an hour and I was like, oh no! I had to put the controller in the freezer. It's like a Joey from Friends moment. I was like, no more. But yeah, obviously the marine life and being in the ocean is completely different from other games that are out there at the moment. But what else would you say that sort of stands out beyond that from other games like No Man's Sky and other sandbox type games?
No Man's Sky is a really interesting example. big on exploration as well. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think No Man's Sky is a big production now. They got delayed a few times and, you know, obviously want to make the game as good as it could be. Our proposition is a lot more humble. It's a lot more, I wouldn't say indie, because I think No Man's Sky in some respects started off as a really small team as well. But we do have sort of big exploration mechanics. So, I mean, the environment's vast, almost as big as Skyrim in terms of size. So, like, we've made
That's
quite an epic
huge.
Environment. There's not as many kind of villages and towns and stuff like that, but there is a really big, vast kind of open landscape to sort of explore. And you have lots of tools. So with this, we're kind of big on engineering as a concept. So maybe I'll use my aquajet and explore and look out for sort of hidden treasures. I've got my metal detector. I've got my rock density scanner. So I've got lots of tools down there to sort of help me maybe uncover hidden mysteries, to find sort of lost items as well. And obviously along the way, you know, I'm going to find out more about the story as well, more about what happened to people along the way. So it makes for, I think, a pretty rewarding exploration experience.
So when can people get this game, and where can people get this game when it comes out? Because it's not released until September, isn't it?
Yeah,
September,
corner, no?
September 12th.
Correct.
Yes. Yep. And that's on PC?
PC, Steam. Yeah. Sure. You can also sort of check out ironfishgame.com as well. So we'll be having lots of updates, regular sort of community posts as well on there too. So Steam, we're looking at for the moment. We'll obviously be sort of looking at other platforms a bit later as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Okay.
And what else have you got? Well, you said you've got some more projects coming up in the future. So what other ones can you can you tell us about?
Not much.
You can't.
I can't say too much. I mean, Beefjack is always busy at Beefjack. So I mean, we do a lot of work on the corporate side as well, agency.beefjack. So we've just finished a really big project for a really big kind of corporate client. So I think we're all a little bit tired. We've got to finish Ironfish as well. I think our next game though is probably going to be Chieftain's Challenge. So it's like a mobile game, golf game, 2D side-scrolling, but it looks 3D as well. So for mobile, it looks pretty nice. Watch this space for that one.
And as a developer and also like the CEO of Beefjack, and you're helping all these indie games, like, what would you say if someone was listening that wants to get into indie games, to make an indie game, like, sort of what advice would you give them?
Good question. For me, it's the knowledge that experience when building games is a lot more useful than the theory. If somebody wants to sort of build an indie game, get stuck in, start making stuff, start hacking stuff together, and maybe you turn around in a year or two and actually you'll have some pretty decent skills, you'll be ready to go. It is a long road, but a very rewarding one. Nothing like it.
I mean, what would you say is, like, it comes first, the story or the mechanics? Like, you're saying, like, obviously you can have a good game with an average story, but it's got really good sort of a gimmick, shall we say? Or would you prefer a story over a gimmick?
I think it's all down to personal preference.
How
can you? We've got Uncharted, great game. Is that better than Tetris? I don't know, is it? How could it be?
Yeah, you're right. That's completely different. And again, personal preference. Some people just don't like those kind of games. I met some people that just like pick up and play. And some people that prefer the sandbox thing. I was speaking to someone the other day. I love the sandbox element of games and getting lost, but some people just think it's boring. So
a lot of people like freedom. A lot of people think freedom is overwhelming. And they don't like the options. They prefer something much more linear.
What do you prefer?
I'm a true designer. I love the process of, I love playing games, obviously. I'm a big Street Fighter fan and things like this. But for me, the process of building games is something kind of unique and complicated, but challenging and interesting. The design philosophy that I guess we built up in Beefjack as well, sort of working on a good sort of paradigm to sort of build lots of different games in. We would always kind of consider, depending on the type of game that you're going for, you would choose to sort of investigate the story first. So if we were building Uncharted, maybe we'd start off sort of really investigating the story, make sure we've got some good characters, and we're telling a good, a good story as well. So it always depends on the games.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Where
can we find you online? So give us all your social details and stuff.
This is the PR bit, go for it.
We're on Facebook, Facebook, Beefjack, so you can find us on there. We're on Twitter as well. You can find us us on Twitter. I think it's Beefjack, all one word. And yeah, check out our site as well, beefjack.com, and find out more about us.
Great. And we'll be tweeting out the food bar.
We'll tweet that out on Fubar. And you can, like you said, you can get the game on PC from the 12th of September.
Yep.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
We'll be back after this.
Star Radio presents
Sarah Love and My Stiggy.
Do you know what? I've got a little project where I want to get photos with rappers and hip hop people, but where they're smiling.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's like always when you get photos with like rap people screwed, and they're like screw face.
You got to tickle them. That's the best way to do it, is tickle them as soon as you see that click about to happen. Tickle.
Like,
no, don't get off me.
Oh, tickle on the
chin. DMX, like, no, stop it.
Every Monday,
Sarah Love and My Stiggy.
From 4 PM on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Spoiler Alert on FUBAR Radio with me, Adam Johnson, Adamantium.
And we, Claire.
And Richard Edwards.
So, he was a lovely guest, wasn't he?
Yeah,
Sean?
And that game sounds really interesting. It's like The Abyss meets Attenborough,
yeah,
meets Riven or Mist or whatever.
Exactly.
There you go.
So,
it's what are we doing now?
So, right, we're going to do some geek news, I think. No, wrong one. Oh,
geek news.
Sorry, Adam, I guffawed into the mic. Sorry, we've all done that. We've all pressed the wrong button. Anyway.
It's a good thing this is a pre-record, so I can edit this out.
Yeah, oh.
And I'm
then,
not going
then
to,
it just sounds like I'm talking nonsense then.
Yeah,
you
I'm
could
not
just,
going
then it just sounds like I'm going crazy. Anyway, what are we talking about? What geeky news have
right,
we got this week?
So, first of all, the new Star Trek TV series.
Yes.
Has been announced. So everything's sort of been announced now, really. Apart from, we haven't really seen the trailer. We've seen a teaser.
Mm-hmm.
No trailer yet.
Yeah, we don't know that much. I mean, they revealed at Comic-Con they showed the ship.
Yeah.
They did a little star flyby.
Right, okay. So pretty much everything we're going to be talking about, you will know firsthand because you've been at Comic-Con.
Well, let Rich tell us what you saw at Comic-Con.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't actually that much at Comic-Con. I mean, they had a panel for 50 years of Star Trek, so they had someone from every one of the Star Trek shows, and they had Brian Fuller, He's the guy who's showrunning the new Star Trek show, which has just been revealed as called Discovery. I mean, he's got a really good track record. I mean, he's done Hannibal, he did Pushing Daisies, he did Dead Like Me, and he also used to write for Star Trek back in the day. That's kind of where he got his big break. And with that, and also the Television Critics Association stuff in the States, they've revealed a little bit about the show. So we don't know that much, but we know some.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, there's been a bit of news since then. Seemingly there'll be a female lead.
Yes, yeah, there's going to be a female captain. Not captain.
Well, that's
one.
The interesting thing. So the whereas most, well, all of the other shows have, you know, the top of the cast list has been the captain.
Mm-hmm.
This time, the main character is going to be the lieutenant commander. It's going to be a female lieutenant commander, and she's going to be the key character. I guess everything's going to be from her point of view.
And it's seemingly, I don't know if I'm getting this correct, but I was reading that it's. The show is based on something we've seen before in previous shows or previously. That's what I've heard.
Mm. Yeah.
It's very vague.
Yeah, and it doesn't get any less vague. I mean, we know that it's going to be set about 10 years before the 5-year mission in the original show, and that it will nod to something that is referenced. And
right.
So people are speculating, could that be the Romulan War? I think it's like a 4-year war. I think this is going to depend. You know, this could be anything, and I think they're staying quite.
They're holding their cards quite close to their chest for this one.
But it's interesting. I mean, because it's going to have an entirely new crew, you can do a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we know everything that's happened in that universe.
Well, it's sort of like how you know, Voyager was an outright. That was a bigger show for me than it was The Next Generation.
I think the thing is, I think with Voyager, it did so much that. I mean, I never liked Voyager because I thought it was trying to be the next generation and do it as well.
I was next generation.
So, but I know people who kind of came into Voyager and loved it.
Yeah.
Not watched, you know, be so into the
But
next
then
gen.
When you have Deep Space Nine, you just go, kill me.
I just
seriously, Deep Space Nine is amazing.
I could not stand Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine.
I was just like, oh my god, this guy with the big ears, will he just fuck off?
Well, yeah, everyone thinks that. But Quark is not the best character.
No.
But I mean, Deep Space Nine, especially once they, you know, got into season 4 and they started telling an arc plot and big war, it was great. Oh yeah, I mean, it took a while to get going.
Mm.
I'm excited. So looking forward to it. I want to see what they're going to do with this. It's out. It's coming to CBS in January 2017.
Yeah, it's also interestingly, it's being made for their sort of their internet network. So
yeah, their streaming service.
Yes, so and it will come to Netflix in the UK basically the day after.
Oh, great!
Oh, that's great.
Which is really good news. But I think this is going down the Fargo route that we were talking about with Stranger Things earlier. You know, it's going to be one story told across 13 episodes, and I think if they continue, they'd probably pick another time period and stuff. So it's going to be entirely new storytelling territory for Star Trek, which, I mean, as it went on, they got more serialized, but, you know, it's never been a show that's been, like, one story told across a certain amount of time. Mm. So I think this is really, really exciting. I was not convinced by the look of the ship, but, I mean, it wasn't a great view of it. It's kind of an odd design. It almost feels a bit Klingon.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know...
It's if you know what, if they don't blow up in the first few episodes, then that's probably that's we're winning. Yeah. I think we're winning.
And Discovery sounds like a very Star Trek-y name.
Yeah,
which is quite. I am looking forward to it, and I hope that harks back to the Star Trek of old a little bit as well.
Mm. But going back to Comic Con, we haven't really spoke about Comic Con. Yes. I think it's a great. Like, we've got a couple of minutes to talk about it. So, how was Comic Con?
Comic Con's cool. I mean, Comic Con's.
It's, by the way, this is San Diego Comic Con.
The big Comic Con
that pretty much is like the mecca of all nerds.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description.
Winners and losers for you. Then what would you say you like the look of and didn't?
Yeah, well, Comic Con's an odd one because it's very much dependent on what people kind of go. You know, what studios take their stuff to show off, and you'd never really know until a few weeks or so beforehand. And kind of film companies, some years they'll go massive on it, and other years they go, oh, I'm not doing this. So this year, for example, Star Wars wasn't there because they'd done Star Wars Celebration the week before, so all of their big announcements they'd done there. And I think, you know, 20th Century Fox didn't do particularly much this year, whereas in some years they'd run crazy with X-Men stuff and things. But this year, on the film front, it was really dominated by DC Warner, who showed off Justice League trailer and a bit of Wonder Woman trailer, and then Marvel, who traditionally, when they have got stuff to show off, they kind of own the Saturday night. And again, they made some announcements, showed some footage. So, you know, between the two of them, I wouldn't really want to make a call of who was bigger. I mean, they both got a lot of press out of it. It'd be a success for both of them. And, you know, the buzz off it was pretty good as well because, you know, the Wonder Woman and Justice League trailers, you know, they were getting...
Talk about them a little bit.
They were positive, and Marvel made some very cool announcements as well. So, you know, they were good. I mean, I don't think anything was earth-shattering. I think the thing with Comic-Con now, though, is it's more as much about TV as films.
I think it's even more so.
Yeah, I think it's overtaken. And I think because of the nature of TV, that people kind of get invested in shows and they watch it every week. And they kind of really get obsessed with it, and they feel like they know the characters and the people. So, yeah, every TV show, genre TV show, will be there in some form. And you know, there is so much more being talked about there. You know, for example, Supernatural or
Neil Gaiman thing.
Oh yes, American Gods.
That's it. That looked really interesting. Oh,
I've not seen that. What's that?
So it's basically Neil Gaiman thing. I've actually not read American Gods, but it looked very intriguing from the trailers, and it kind of, the trailer started in a certain way, and I can't really even explain it. It looked quite fantastical by the end. I thought it was just kind of like a bit of a thriller, but it looked quite interesting.
Well, the main idea of it is there's this guy who's just come out of prison, and he gets recruited by this mysterious old guy who is Ian McShane, and he kind of enters this world of basically old world gods who've moved to America. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, you've got Norse gods and stuff. And that when people, the idea is that when people, like, say, the Vikings sort of went to America, they took, like, their gods with them, and they've all sort of set up shop in America. Mm. That's the basic premise of it.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm halfway through the book at the moment. It's really good.
I've not read it, so I'm reading through Preacher at the moment. So, but yeah, no, I kind of agree with the TV stuff. I think the TV stuff's sort of more, not important. It's more more prevalent and more exciting for me. Because, like, you know, we saw Doctor Strange, the Doctor Strange trailer, and you mentioned Justice League and Wonder Woman and stuff like that. It's fine, but I think you kind of want to see more different things, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of, it gets a bit samey after a while.
No.
Or it's all superhero-y as well. Oh yeah, and Blair Witch.
Well, that was huge news.
That's quite exciting.
That was, and you know, fair play to Lionsgate for you know, we knew about this film, we knew about The Woods. They were setting up interviews. They got a release date. You know, there'd even been a trailer for this film, and then suddenly, I know that film, The Woods, we were talking about. Oh, that's actually a Blair Witch sequel.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And it looks quite good.
Yeah, and,
I don't think I think that genre of film was getting a bit tired for me, but I thought it looked great. Like, I'm really excited. I missed it in the cinema the first time around. I'd like to go see this one in the cinema.
See, I was too young to go see this in the cinema.
But now you're old enough to
old enough to not go see this film in the cinema because I'm going to be too scared to do that.
So, what else have we got in geek news, or have we got any more geek news to talk about?
Yeah, so a quick one is Superman is going to appear in the new season of Supergirl, which is also moving to the CW, which is in a television network in America.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Supergirl's done quite well.
It is. I quite like Supergirl, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Good fun.
And it sort of completes the CW's lineup of DC TV shows.
Well, that was it, because, you know, Supergirl was out on its own on CBS. Yeah. And they'd even done a crossover with The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like a logical stablemate. I mean, it does make... I mean, there are some production things, because they're moving it from, I think it was California, it was before, up to Vancouver. And Calista Flockhart, who is great as Kat Grant and is one of the best things about the show, she's not going to be in every episode now, so she's going to be a recurring character. So it'd be interesting to see what that does. But I think the snark is going to be provided by other characters. I mean, it's a fun show, though, because I think... Melissa, and I'm not sure how you pronounce her surname,
Benoist.
But she's really good at doing this kind of wide-eyed, wonderful thing. It's such, it's so like 180 degrees from the movie sort of DC stuff, and you know, she does it really, really well, almost sort of like the Christopher Reeve movies.
And what do you think about the casting of the new Superman in Supergirl, who'll be making an appearance, like, because it's...
Oh, and by the way, someone has to talk about phrasing over at the CW. In, like, I've seen posters of Superman is going to be in Supergirl. I'm like, oh, come on.
Adam. I know some of them have been... I mean, I've seen some that have been a little bit been ruder than that even, but...
Yeah, that's the more tame one I've seen.
Yeah, but I think some of them have been faked.
But yeah, what do you think about the new casting? Do you think it's going to work?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a main character.
I think he's a recurring character, isn't he?
Yeah, and it's not, he's not new to suit. I mean, he's been emailing her quite frequently. You see him kind of from the back quite a lot. And so it's not like he's new, and I think you'd be missing a trick if you didn't put him in there. It's like putting Darth Vader in Rogue One. I mean, it was kind of inevitable.
And what is happening in SFX this month? They've got Luke Cage on the front cover.
We have. It's very exciting.
Yes.
It's a big Luke Cage exclusive. I've been on set.
Oh, you've been on set? Not me.
It wasn't me personally, unfortunately. I couldn't go. Let someone else go. I was busy. I couldn't go to New York. Basically, we've been talking about you, Luke Cage. Yeah, it's a really cool cover. And it's sort of heading up a massive TV preview. Obviously, there's so much TV coming up in September. Like, there's almost too much to fit in, which is I'm not going to say that's a problem. So we've got stuff on Walking Dead, we've got Ash vs. Evil Dead, The Flash, Red Dwarf, Arrow, Gotham, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Westworld. Basically, anything, all the big shows that are coming up, there's a lot on that. Bit on Star Wars from Rogue One, from Celebration, Comic-Con news. But basically, it's packed.
And that's out now.
That is out now, yes.
Yes.
Nice.
And where can people get the magazine?
Anywhere.
Everywhere.
Any decent news agent you'll be able to get it from. You can get it online at myfavouritemagazines.co.uk/SFX, or you can get it on your iPad, iOS, and you can get it on Android. So whatever your format, you can get it.
Sweet.
Nice.
Right, so after this next track, I'll be chatting to the... Managing Director of Hello Games, which is the creator of No Man's Sky.
Yes,
and it was it's a fantastic game. I've been playing it all week. When I obviously did this interview, I didn't have the copy because it literally just came out that day I spoke to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we'll be talking to him straight after this.
Hello. Negative feedback on stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I can see why people. Oh, yeah. I get. I'm irate. Any criticism at all. Yeah.
Criticism is like, hard, isn't it?
I would absolutely, if I could, strap anybody down that had anything to say about in a negative way. And it's all right. Give me. You've said this in your thing, so you didn't like it, and it wasn't funny for these. But give me three examples, or I will pour this petrol on you and set you on fire.
Every Friday,
Screen Talk with Dan Clark.
From 12 PM on FUBAR Radio. Spoiler alert on FUBAR Radio.
Now, not many games have me as excited as the my next guest's game. When I first saw Fallout 4, 400 hours of gameplay. I thought that was enough. I thought that was it. I don't need any more gameplay whatsoever. At all, until this game crossed my path, No Man's Skies, a game that has over 18 quadrillion planets for players to explore and find, and there's just different creatures involved. I mean, this company, Hello Games, has pretty much taken away all my free time now. Thank you very much, guys. And the guy I'm going to hold responsible is Sean Murray. Hello, Sean.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad.
So, No Man's Skies. Can you tell us a little bit about No Man's Skies?
So, No Man's Sky is a it's a science fiction game set in a what we call a procedurally generated universe. So that means that we've taught the PlayStation 4 or the PC some rules about how to make things, how to make creatures, and how to make trees and rocks and planets.
So you've basically,
you've basically
created a universe in a console.
Yeah, we've taught it the rules, and then it goes off and creates everything that you see. So when you play the game, when you boot it up, you start on your own unique planet. Every player starts on their own planet on the outside edge of the universe. Mm. And the goal, for some players at least, is to try and get to the center of that universe. And as they do, they'll find that things get a little bit harder as they go, and a little bit weirder and crazier, but also the best resources, the best tech, are only, you know, available as you make that journey.
And how long has this game actually taken to create? Because I first saw it about 2014 at E3, and I was blown away when I saw, like, I wasn't actually at E3, but I saw, like, all the coverage from it. And when I saw sort of some demos or some trailers for it, I was like, this is incredible. Like, how have you done this, and how long has it taken to get from now till back then when you first had the idea?
So we're... A thing that's kind of unique about Hello Games that makes No Man's Sky is that it's a really small company.
Mm. You're based in South East London, right?
We're in Guildford.
Yeah.
We're in a little shed in Guildford, basically. And there's like 15 of us now. When I started working on No Man's Sky, it was just me. For a year on my own in my spare time kind of thing, and then three friends joined me for another year, and then you, when you saw it at E3, that was probably 2.5 years in, and that was
All right.
2.5 years ago, so we've been working on it for 5 years now. It's a very long time. It's super weird to see the game actually coming out, and now we're, you know, kind of over a dozen people, which seems big for us, but it's tiny in terms of like kind of video games companies generally, right? So normally when you go into a shop and you buy a game like off the shelf or whatever,
yeah,
then you've had hundreds of people working on that.
Yeah, that is incredible to know, like, you that such a small company has probably made I'm gonna put my hat on in the ring to say that it's gonna be game of the year this year.
Well, that would be really nice, but actually we set out to just create something really different.
Yeah.
No Man's Sky is just a really different experience. It's kind of, you know, it's a game that's a sandbox, I guess, a bit like Minecraft or something like that, where there isn't a story necessarily that you're playing through. You kind of make your own story. Mm-hmm. You can be like a trader or a fighter. You can be an explorer or just try to survive on some of these, like, hostile planet.
So have you been surprised by the reaction that this game has sort of the traction it's been getting, like, over the last couple of years?
Yeah, definitely very surprised by it. I mean, we started out making what we thought was quite a niche game.
Hmm.
You know, it's science fiction from the kind of 60s and 70s is kind of what we're inspired by, and that seems kind of like niche and quite nerdy to us.
Yeah.
It's like something we personally really like, and it's quite a different game. It can be a very chilled out game, you know. You see a lot of people playing it even on release day, and it can be quite a relaxing game to play and quite a different game to play, whereas normally most games that you buy off the shelf are very, like, story driven, very kind of like driven by, I guess, having an explosion, you know, scripted every 15 seconds or something like that. No Man's Sky is really different to that. So we were really surprised that people seemed to like it and that it kind of resonated with them.
And so I'm just reading the press release here. It says here that 99.9% of the planets will never ever be found or discovered. That's just an incredible amount of planets that, you know, that will never ever be found. But obviously some players will find them, some other players. How will people like be able to share what they found?
Well, people are already, it came out overnight in the US, and we have like thousands and thousands of people just streaming it on Twitch at the moment. It's like pretty much the most popular game on Twitch right now. We have people kind of out there exploring and finding new creatures and naming them, and then they upload them to our server. And if anyone else comes to that planet or, you know, like finds that same creature, then they'll see that name that that other person has given to them. So like, in terms of like being blown away by the reaction to the game, like last night, like over 10 million species of creature were discovered.
Oh, right? Wow.
Which is more than like has been discovered on Earth so far. So that's pretty mind-blowing thing to come into this morning.
I did have another question, but it's just completely gone from my mind. Oh, that was it. So have, obviously, people get to name their own planets, get to name their own creatures and stuff. There must have been some funny names you've already seen.
Yeah, the first few hours, we were just watching the names come in, and it turns out, like, gamers, when it comes to giving things a name, can be pretty funny and pretty humorous and pretty juvenile too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so we have a profanity filter in there.
Oh, okay.
Which is like to stop people, you know, naming things rude things. But
yeah,
human ingenuity is incredible. You know,
people are going to find ways around.
They will find a way, right? And do. There is always, like, probably, you know, I guess one thing that we're relying on is kind of one of a basic human desire is to go out and explore things, but it turns out a secondary basic human desire is to name things after certain parts of people's bodies.
So also in this press release I've been reading, Stephen Colbert jokingly has called you God.
Yeah, well, I think jokingly, for sure.
Yeah. But that's basically because you've created a whole universe. You've created, that's how, like, people will see it. Do you think that's how sort of video games are going to become now? They're going to be a little bit more, not sentient is the word, but sort of they'll have these programs where you don't know what you're going to expect from the game because it's going to be so massive and so huge. Because everything we've seen is now getting bigger and wider. And like I mentioned at the top of the interview, like Fallout 4, when they announced that 2 years ago, 400 hours of gameplay, I was like, that's just too much. And then when I saw your game, like of 18 quadrillion planets, I was like, seriously, like it's just going to get, everything is getting so huge. Like what do you think's next for the gaming industry?
Well, I think what we're doing, which is called like procedural generation, when you get the computer to generate the things that you see, is like, I think, going to be part of the future for sure. You know, like as a kid, I dreamed of, you know, I used to play games with very kind of crappy looking graphics or whatever, you know, very basic graphics. But I dreamt that games would look really kind of photoreal, and kind of we would be able to put on VR goggles and walk around in these worlds or whatever. And that is, like, that is happening, you know, and it's kind of incredible. I think, like, VR will definitely be part of the future. I think there's, like, procedural generation, like what we're doing, will be part of the future. It won't be everything, not every game will be made this way, but, like, right now, if you were to have an idea for a game, and it was quite, even if it was quite a small game idea, quite a, like, just a little idea, right? But the first line of that idea was, well, it will be set in a city.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly you have to hire, like, literally hundreds or maybe thousands of artists to build that city, right? before you can have your game idea, you know. And so that's like one of the reasons that it's quite hard to innovate in video games, because you know, you have to make things that you know will definitely 100% be popular, you know. So often you see games being quite similar to each other. You see lots of the same kind of first-person shooter, for instance, because if you're going to build the whole city to set your game in and you're going to have thousands of people working on it, then you kind of have to be sure that it's going to be really popular. For us, if you're using something like procedural generation, we don't build cities right now, but you easily could.
So is that something you're going to be looking to like to add on to the game in the future, to build cities and sort of colonies on different planets?
Well, it's interesting actually, because the game is kind of coming out now and it's finished, and I'm super happy about that. But in some ways, a game like ours is never finished.
No, right?
It's a sandbox game, a bit like Minecraft or Terraria or Stranded Deep or whatever, and we hope to kind of put out updates for it that will add and expand, just like there have been for, say, Minecraft. And so one of the next things that we're doing is adding base building, the ability for players to build like their own little bases and kind of set up camp and stuff like that on planets. And so that will be a really cool thing, and that will really change the game, and for some people that will be all they do. Or we're adding the ability for you to own freighters, like huge space freighters, so that you can become like more of a trader, and that's all you do is kind of trading goods, you know, using your freighter going around space. And so things like that are really cool and will really change the game. So in 2 years' time, potentially, when people are playing No Man's Sky, it will be really different to what they're playing right now.
So you're basically taking away all my free time. That's what you're doing. Because I can't wait to. I haven't played the game yet. I'm gonna get it this weekend, but I cannot wait to play it, because I will spend hours upon hours playing this game, because it looks absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much for joining me, Sean.
Thanks a lot.
All the best for the game. So No Man's Sky is available to download now on the PlayStation Store, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And you can also get it at your local gaming retailers as well.
Yep.
Brilliant. All right, thank you, Sean. Speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Ooh, yeah, I'll be fine, yeah. Ooh, okay, yeah. Oh, the good Lord knows it.
Yeah.
finish this bit of chocolate.
Sorry, I've been like feeding everyone chocolate.
Welcome back to Spoiler Alert with me, Adam Johnson, AdamantiumA128 on Twitter.
I'm Claire, or we Claire on Twitter.
I'm Richard. I'm at Rich D Edwards at Twitter.
Here we go. Mm.
So it's time now for Trailer Trash. Now I'm going to mix it up a little bit. You know how we always have the same.
Yeah.
I'm going to change it, and I'm going to go for what one is it? This one, number 11.
Nice.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I like this.
Because this is an oh boy sort of trailer trash. Because we've had a lot of trailers come out.
Right. Okay. So let's start from the top, shall we? Mm-hmm. Wonder Woman. I was very excited by Wonder Woman. Very, very excited. I am actually holding out all hope for Wonder Woman. Possibly stupid thing to do. What do you think, Rich?
I really hope this film is good.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people at DC and Warner who are holding out a lot of hope for this film. I mean, she was really good in
She was like the standout thing. Yeah. If we
can give more lines.
Yeah, if she was given more lines, she was given more to do in that film, I think it would have been a much better film. Obviously cut out a lot of that courtroom stuff and
we're getting sucked back in.
Yes, we thought we got away from
it. No,
they always sucked me back in.
Wonder Woman, I thought the pacing looked good in the trailer. I thought it looked like a good origin story. I like the glimpse of the Amazons, or I quite like the look of this, there's a few quips in there which worked. Actually, didn't seem forced. I'm just hoping they've not shown all their best bits, and then what happens is we go into the cinema, like you said, with Suicide Squad, and it's like, I want this to be over.
I think, though, the fact that it's set in the First World War is it's a huge head start. It's automatically different to pretty much every superhero movie. Now, I mean, the first Captain America movie, I think, is flawed, but the period setting is not one of the flaws with it.
No.
I thought they did that really well, and I think this, you know, looks pretty cool, and she looks great in action.
Yeah.
I think the trailer kind of sums a little bit at the end too. Well, let's just show a lot of fighting, but that's what trailers are like.
Yeah, that's pretty much what trailers
are.
So
I don't think we can judge too much there. So I think it's really promising.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I really want this film to do well, not just because I think it's be good for DC to have a hit, but it's so important that there is a successful female superhero film.
Yeah.
Because I think if it flops, studios just go, oh God, it doesn't work, and then they pull back, and it's like, it's so important that, you know, now superheroes are so established on the big screen that they do make it more diverse.
I completely agree.
You know, Marvel have just announced Brie Larson's playing Captain Marvel. You know, that's an Oscar winner who's got the role, and so fingers crossed that's going to be another one that's big. But you know, please, 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 Wonder Woman, be good and do well.
I'm hoping from the trailer, obviously we see some glimpses of action scenes and Wonder Woman in action. Although obviously there's special effects in every single film, it didn't look like when I saw the trailer for Batman v Superman, it did look very, very, very dark and very, it looked like a computer game to me. This one looks like it's been done a bit different, that it's a bit of a lighter touch, it looks a bit more elegant, and I quite like the look of that. And again, I think she looks great. Like when the picture was first released of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, I wasn't wholly convinced through a static picture or static shot of her. I think she looked a bit willowy, a bit modelly, but actually, and I hate when they release those first images of people just cast, because it's not the thing, that's not what they're going to be like.
And it's, what are you looking at?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that sort of pose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, what? It doesn't work. But actually, yes, but again, Batman v Superman, she really worked. She brought a bit of finesse to the whole thing, because I thought it was very kind of blech. So I'm hoping that this is going to work. I thought this was one of the standout shows, more so out of all the Comic-Con stuff, film wise even more so than Doctor Strange and stuff like that, which we're not talking about today, but this one intrigued me. I'm really looking forward to it. Again, interesting to see a female sort of superhero leading a film. So fingers crossed.
And you know, Chris Pine as well. Yeah,
Chris Pine.
Yes, exactly. Steve Trevor. You know, and I think he's become less fun in the Star Trek movies as they've gone on, because I thought he was so good in the first JJ Star Trek. But you know, he's really charming.
Yeah.
He's a good present. And I think if they bounce off each other well, and it kind of becomes a really good sort of, this sort of team.
Yeah.
I think it could be be really good.
Because he works Chris Pine in comedy and things like that as well, and I've seen him in comedy and doing different sort of roles. Like, I think when directors draw that out of him and draw a bit of lightness, you're right, very charming. And I hope, like, from what I'm seeing, it looks like they hopefully have that chemistry on screen. Feels very Captain America to me. Not, like, I'm not saying it looks like Captain America, but obviously the period setting. She's an all-American, like, she's got that kind of, not all-American, but she's got that kind of, like, the same colours and things. It's all sort of set in the same sort of time. So there's comparisons online to kind of Captain America and things like that. But I think it's going to be okay. But then I say that about a lot of films and I go and see them, like Suicide Squad, and I was like, oh. So.
But I think this year we've been... It's just been a disappointing year for films. I mean, last year, I think we were totally spoiled. I mean, I think you'd come out last year saying, well, Jurassic World was okay, but you know, we'd have taken Jurassic World every time this year. You know, it would have been one of the very best movies. It's just because we got things like Rogue One and you know,
exactly. And good. Last year with Mad Max and stuff like that.
Which was amazing.
I mean,
yeah. Sorry, so not Rogue One. It was Force Awakens. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. But you know, it was just such a good year last year. And you thought, oh, everyone knows how to make a blockbuster now. It's brilliant. And
no, clearly not. Yeah. Warner. Anyway, the next let's go on.
The next one on the list is another DC one.
Yes, another Warner.
So this
one.
This was a surprise because I didn't think they'd have enough to release a trailer.
Well, thing is though that they'll quite often. Rig some of their production so they've got something in time for Comic-Con. I mean, a couple of years ago with Guardians of the Galaxy, I think it had been shooting for a week or two and they still showed I mean, you know that lineup sequence where Star-Lord winds up his middle finger and that was made for Comic-Con in the first place. So, you know, they can if they want to.
Justice League
that wasn't my most favourite one.
Oh really? Okay.
I know what they're trying to do, but like I'm just kind of. I think you know what I think I've got like DC fatigue now. I'm a bit like, nah.
That's not good after three movies.
That's not good at all. I think Wonder Woman. I'm saying different things at Wonder Woman because it looks for me it looks very different. But with this, it just feels like they're squashing in quips and squashing in lightheartedness. When I don't know, like I just think the tone of the movies is just is very. Each movie feels very disjointed to me, and they don't really work cohesively. In this, I'm not sure. And the Flash was really annoying. Actually, didn't like him.
There's more humour in this though than was in the whole of Batman v Superman.
Oh yeah, oh god, like within like a second, you're like, oh yeah, okay.
So you know, that is a good sign. Okay. I think, and I mean, there is a slight element of bringing the gang together, which is going to be inevitable about this film. I mean, there's. No, I'm not going to say that because it's a massive spoiler.
Okay.
But, you know, it is bringing... you know, it's got to... this film's got to do quite a lot.
It's got to do a lot in a short space of time because you have to assemble all these heroes from different sort of parts of the world and different backgrounds that have never interacted before this film.
And you've got to bring back Superman.
And you've got to bring back Superman, and then you've got to... Because obviously they're going to do that. And then you've got to fight the big baddie all in 90 minutes or longer.
I think this is a Zack Snyder movie. It'll be 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And then there'll be an extra R-rated cut or something.
I like the look of Aquaman.
I mean, Aquaman is a character who has been roundly mocked. Family Guy hasn't helped him.
They've definitely cooled him up, kind of thing. They've definitely made him much edgier.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't mind. Like, I read some of the New 52 Aquaman, and I thought it was really good. And
it was,
it's fine.
I agree with you. When I picked up the New 52, obviously they've just rebooted the whole entire DC comic line again. It was the better one out of the reboots that I really liked. So I thought it's taken what is a joke character and actually
made him quite cool. Yeah, they made him really cool. And I really, really liked Aquaman the New 52. I kind of see what they've done here with the film. I don't know, like I think I definitely want to see it because you're seeing so many iconic characters on screen. I'm going to be really open-minded about it, you know. But every time now that I'm going in to see a film from the DC stable or the Warner stable, I kind of almost know that I'm not going to enjoy it, and that's terrible. I'm going in with that preconception, but I'm going to try.
I think the thing this has got is it's got to catch up almost. It's got to push people's opinion the other way.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Marvel are now in a position where people go in expecting it to be great.
Yeah.
DC kind of has to take people's expectations, which are probably not on the positive side, and pull them back round. And I really hope Wonder Woman and Justice League can do that, because the more good films there are is a good thing.
So do you think that after the I say failure, but it's not a failure really, is it, of Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad, that the DC expanded universe is sort of a lost cause?
I wouldn't say that yet. No. And also I think they will make a profit off Batman v Superman, though. I think they will still see it as a disappointment, because with brands as big as Batman and Superman, they would be expecting to get well over $1 billion. That they should be the dream. And they want these films to be as good, because better blockbusters tend to make more money. I don't think they'll be giving up just yet, though. As I've said before, I do think they should just not worry about an expanded universe. Just say that's Marvel's thing. We'll just make a really good Superman movie, and we'll make a really good Batman movie.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to Ben Affleck's Batman. I think there are little glimmers of hope. Wonder Woman. I'm intrigued about Ben Affleck's Batman.
Because that's going to be, I read somewhere that's going to have a lot of villains in it.
Yeah, and he wants to get back to Batman being a detective.
And it's also set, and the other rumour I heard was it's also set in Arkham Asylum, which would make sense for there being a hell of a lot of villains in it.
That would be great.
Because you don't the Nolan's Batman, you get a little glimmer of what is Arkham Asylum, but it's...
You read Arkham Asylum?
I've read Arkham Asylum and I've played the game.
Yeah, the game's great.
Great.
Yeah. The comic's incredible.
Yeah. But you don't actually get to see in a cinematic way what Arkham really is. Is it a prison?
You just know that's
where the bad guys are kept. But this will just, I think if it is set in Arkham, it has the potential to be a really awesome film. Batman film. It probably could even outdo the Nolan ones.
Oh.
Bold statement, but...
I don't know. I think it's room to just do something completely different. Yeah. And I think the Nolan Batmans, they work because he just said he had a vision of how he was going to do them. They don't have to fit in with another universe. No. He's just like, I'm going to make a kind of real world Batman.
I'm just seeing it as a standalone film. It will be a standalone film, probably with like little nods and winks to expanded universe. Yeah, the Ben Affleck one.
I just don't think, I'm kind of in agree with Richard. I don't think everything has to connect up. Marvel do that really well, and they had time to do that. They were not one of the first to ever do that ever, but back with Iron Man, that's where it started. I kind of feel with going back to Suicide Squad, if they'd just taken out all the origin story shit and not even shown Joker and just made a really good film about villains, a cool dark film about villains with a bit tongue in cheek, it would have worked. And then just go make a separate story elsewhere about the Joker. A Joker film, I'd like to see, then maybe that would work. But yeah, I'm just kind of, I don't know, Wonder Woman, I've got a bit of hope for that. The Batman thing, yeah, but I'm not really bothered about Justice League. I thought it was interesting to see, but it looked like it was, there was no I don't know, they weren't outside a lot. It just looked, everything was very inside. It was quite enclosed, and a few quips here and there. I think it will be okay. I think it will be better than Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Okay, well, I'm actually going to throw this out to our listeners. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us. You can tweet me at adamantium128. You can tweet Claire at WeClaire. And you can tweet Richard D. Edwards. But you can also email us with what you think about the DC expanded universe by emailing us at spoileralert@foobarradio.com. You can also get in contact with us about anything, really.
Cool.
Just drop us an email. I'd like to be loved.
Any more trailers?
We're going to talk about Rogue One.
Oh, I think we should let Rich lead the way with this one.
I really don't care about this.
Oh, really?
I think we should let Rich lead this, because you are possibly the biggest Star Wars fan I know. So go for it. Let rip.
I think it looks fantastic. I think continuing with Phantom Force Awakens left off, Lucasfilm just gets Star Wars, they do seem to do everything right. This trailer kind of adds to what we've seen before. It feels so in keeping with A New Hope, just the look of it, the ships. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it reveals Darth Vader at the end, who we knew was going to be in it, but it's great to see him on screen. They also showed a little slightly different clip of him at Star Wars Celebration. You know, you're just getting little hints of the story. We know a little bit about the international trailers have revealed a little bit more about Felicity Jones, Jin, her dad.
Yeah.
That he's the one who sent out a message from the Death Star, or he's on the Death Star. So this is all very exciting, and it just looks awesome.
But I like a lot of the ground battle stuff as well. I think I like a lot of that, like, and you're kind of seeing how everything's forming and motivations behind, you know, kind of the creation of this sort of universe that we all know and love. But I like that on the ground vibe. Obviously, we're going to see a bit of space.
Yeah.
But I'm quite intrigued by this one. This one's getting me quite excited.
This one is, like, for me, probably number two on our list, because we've got a fourth one which we just watched just before we came on.
Oh, is the
on
fourth
air.
One number one?
And I think the fourth one's number one.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I was just going to say with Rogue One, I mean, it's really interesting to see how this one does, because obviously the Force Awakens is third biggest film of all time, biggest film not made by James Cameron, and that had Han Solo, that had the promise of Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, R2-D2, C-3PO. It had all those iconic characters. This doesn't really. I mean, it's got Darth Vader in it, but he's very much a supporting player. And this is expecting people to buy into episode 3.9.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this really sort of shows how strong Star Wars is as a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say that I have never watched a trailer where the main character looks as bored. I thought she looked so bored, like, in every clip you saw of Felicity Jones.
That's because she rebels.
Yeah.
Rebels against fun.
Oh, Adam.
It's not easy being the leader of a rebel faction, you know, against
the
Empire.
She's got a lot in her mind. She's got the whole world on her bloody shoulders, Dad. You try leading the rebel forces.
Death Star plans. They don't steal themselves.
Yeah, she's multitasking that shit. Anyway,
the final trailer for Trailer Trash this week is a new one that's just, we literally just watched it before we started recording this,
yes.
And it's called Arrival.
Now, you just landed this on us.
I did kind of pull this one on you. So this is a new film with Amy Adams, Forest Whitaker, and
Jeremy Renner.
Thank you.
Jeremy Renner.
And it's basically, the plot line is, it's alien ships have landed. Amy Adams' character is a linguist.
Yeah.
So she has been called to try and help translate what these aliens are saying.
Before they possibly go to war, or we possibly have a big Barney with them. That's a simplified version.
And it's out in November.
Mm. Yes.
Now, I am definitely going to go to the cinema to see this one.
It looks really good, actually. Like, I hadn't really heard of this one at all, actually. But I'm quite looking forward to it. It looks like, I kind of think, like, at least once a year, like a serious sci-fi film that isn't full of superheroes. And I hope it doesn't do a Prometheus on me now, but I'm really excited to see it, and then all of the plot doesn't add up and it's a total bunch of crap. So I'm really looking forward to this one. It looks quite interesting. I think it's derived from a short story, I think it was. The short story is called Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang. And he explores themes of war and language. And so I think it's going to be... I'm going to go away and read the short story, actually, because it's intrigued me. And Amy Adams is great. She's a really good actress. So, and I love Forest Whitaker. I think he's brilliant.
Yes.
So this is a little surprise one. I'm glad that you showed us.
Yeah, and this is my number one of this month.
Wow.
Because it was such a surprise.
It does look really good.
Because it was like, all the others we've spoke about have all been like sort of superheroes, Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking there's been nothing really new that sort of grabbed me. There's been a couple of other ones. There's a new one about NASA. I can't remember the name of it now, but these black women that are working for NASA.
Yeah.
That looks quite interesting. I might go see that one. But this one was the standout one. I thought, oh, okay, this is going
to
be...
Oh, it's got a bit of a Close Encounters to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it
does. I've got this slight worry that the last act is going to be... war.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be a little bit clever in that, because the build-up is really clever. I mean, interestingly, Denis Villeneuve, the director of this, he's the guy who's doing the Blade Runner sequel.
Yes.
Which is out next year.
So
let's check out his form.
actually, that is a good point. I'm going to go see this to kind of just see what the vibe is. But from the trailers, it looks really good.
Yes.
But let's not even talk about Blade Runner thing, because that's one of my favourite films ever, and I'm so annoyed that they're doing stuff with it. And Harrison Ford just... like making several comebacks to old films. But anyway, that's besides the point. I would agree with you, Adam. I think this is probably one of my favourites that we've talked about this month. Wonder Woman, a close second.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Right, so it's nearly time to wrap up the show. So we're going to play a quick track, and then we're going to come back, and then we might have time for a quick, a very, very quick Good, Bad and the Ugly.
Oh, okay, go okay. for it.
Shadow in the city, all around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on, and dance all night, just like the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer. Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Been down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. Looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But now it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, summer, in the city.
It's nearly time for us to wrap up, so we're going to have to squeeze in a Good, the Bad and the Ugly this week.
Now, you've said that the Good, the Bad and the Ugly this week is cult classics.
Yes.
So,
just to
it's
explain.
It's broad, right?
Yeah, it's quite broad. Because of Stranger Things having so many cult film references into it, like you can, if you're going through any scene, you can probably pick up two or three, like, their influences. I've decided what are our favourite cult films that we kind of want to probably see in the next season.
Okay.
So we're going to go, we have to run through these quickly. For me, my good is Donnie Darko.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. Love it, great film.
Richard?
Tremors.
Tremors, nice.
I love Kevin Bacon. I've got a Bacon one on my list as well. I just went for a Verhoeven theme and just went Total Recall. It's one of my top films, five films of all time.
Oh, really?
The 1991, by the way, not that.
I don't think anyone thought you were talking about
this. Who do you think I am? But yeah, Total Recall, absolutely love it.
Yes.
Okay, next.
My worst one is The Warriors.
You heathen! Out with you! Out with you! Why?
I watched it quite recently, and I sat there and I was like, going,
it's amazing!
I just don't get this.
So that's like, Michael Bay, and you hate the war. You like Michael Bay, and you hate the Warriors. I think you have to step away from the mic and just shut up.
I just like it's not. It wasn't a film
you just went
for me.
Into it.
I think because it feels like the film is dated quite badly because that's what New York's not like anymore.
Well, of course, it's not like that. It was never like.
But the fact is, though, right? I'm gonna bring this music down. The gangs in it. When you first see the gangs, I was watching it and pissing myself laughing.
But they're
all
so
their
cool.
They were fucking mimes.
That's what makes it cool. It's iconic. What would you think, Rich? The Warriors. This could be quite. Divisive.
It's okay. I mean, talk about it.
And you're a 70s child, sort of.
By three months. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Right, I'm going to do the show on my own now. You can leave. Right, anyway.
So that was my choice.
That is your choice.
Richard, you're bad.
Okay.
It's kind of not really that geeky, but I kind of will say it with Null and I. Oh. I just think it's massively overrated. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not that into it. Putting it out there. I stuck with the Verhoeven theme and went for Showgirls. And I know some people think it's so bad it's good, but I can't watch that film. I just think it's stupid.
It's really not good.
No, it's not. There are some lists online that go, oh my god, it's so bad it's good, you have to see it. But it's just, I've watched it like at least 3 or 4 times, and I'm just like, and I love Verhoeven, but I can't do that film.
There is an amazing DVD version from the States, and it has a commentary from a guy who does a stand-up routine, basically about mocking Showgirls, and it's very, very funny.
Oh,
And I mean, there's one bit, you know, the famous swimming pool scene.
Yeah.
Karma Clock, oh, I'm a sexy monster.
It's ridiculous.
It does kind of make Showgirls almost work.
Anyway, what's our guilty pleasure choice?
Our guilty pleasure. I don't know if this is a guilty pleasure or not, but I've put it in there because I quite like it as a cult film. Office Space.
Oh, yeah. Office Space is cool.
Yeah, it's
cool.
A good film. Yeah. But I just like, I want to squeeze that in. Richard?
I'm going to say a film called Town Called Panic. It's an animated film. It's Belgian. It's about some... that horse who lives basically like a plastic horse who lives with an Indian and a cowboy. The ones from the milk adverts.
Oh, right, okay.
And yeah, it's just mad, utterly, utterly mad. And there's the best ever scene of a horse playing a piano you will ever see.
I stuck with Verhoeven, obviously, and went for Hollow Man because I like Kevin Bacon, I like Verhoeven, and I mean, that film, I saw it in the cinema. Like randomly, like I should have been at uni, but I just went to cinema. I did that a lot during my uni years, and I just really enjoyed it, and I've watched it so many times since. It reeks of Verhoeven, actually, when you really like get into it. At the time I was like, oh yes, it's okay. Absolutely stinks of Verhoeven, and that's why I love it. I absolutely love it. And Kevin Bacon's really good at playing sort of maniacal, invisible, crazy man. Yeah, kind of thing. Love it.
Right, so.
The special effects are great in that. The appearing and disappearing sequences are fantastic.
I think it's great. Like, I really, really like it. Like, I think it's bright. At the end, it's starting to look slightly dated now, but when you can kind of see through Kevin Bacon, but not really, and you can see sort of the muscle and the skin. I thought it was great. Like, it's just a good film. So yeah, that's it. We got there.
Yes, we got there
on
the end. Thank you very much for joining us, Richard. Always a pleasure. Where can people get their latest issue of SFX magazine?
All Good News Agents, whatever that means. You can get them online. myfavoritemagazines.co.uk/SFX. You can get it on your iPad or Android device.
Cool. And Luke Cage is on the cover.
It is
very muscular, rugged.
Blasting through a wall.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Luke Cage. Yeah. And where can we all find each other online, Adam?
You can find me at adamantium128 on Twitter.
At Rich D. Edwards on Twitter.
And I'm WeClaire on Twitter, or you can check out WeClaire.com for all geekiness.
Yes. And email us at spoileralert@foobarradio.com if you want to get in contact with us, and we'll speak to you in a month's time.
Yay.
In September. Back to school, though. Bye.
Bye.
There's a rhythm and rush these days, where the lights don't move and the colors don't fade. Leaves you empty with nothing but dreams, in a world gone shallow, in a world gone mean. Sometimes there's things a man cannot know. Years won't turn and the leaves won't grow. There's no place to run and no gasoline. Engine won't turn and the train won't leave. Engines won't turn and the train won't leave. I will stay with you. Till the morning.
the thoughts of the man who lies. There is the truth and it's on our side. Dawn is coming, open your eyes. Look into the sun as a new day's rise.
Sun as a new day's rise.